Do you own your home? Have you considered what could happen to your home if something happened to you and your family had to go through the dreaded probate process? Hello, I am the estate planning mom and my name is Krista Hermance. I am an estate planning attorney at Hermance Law. If you own your home and something happened to you, depending on how title is held, your family may have to go through probate court. Probate in California can take an average of 12 months to 2 years to complete. It is very expensive and public. A will, while it states how you want your stuff distributed, doesn't actually avoid probate. It just guarantees it. If you want to avoid probate, a trust might be your best option, and we can help you figure that out. We have offices in Ventura, Westlake Village, Santa Clarita, and work with clients virtually throughout California. For information, text WILL to 474747. Again, text WILL to 474747.
This attorney advertising is intended for general information only, not intended to be legal advice, nor does it create an attorney-client relationship. Attorneys at Hermance Law are licensed to practice law in California only. You should seek advice from a legal professional licensed in your state. Hermance Law is located in Ventura, California, and can be reached at 805-518-9633. Debbie Marcoux is licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act, NMLS ID 237926. Also licensed in Arizona 0941504, Georgia 69178, Illinois 031.0058339, Nevada 57237, Oregon, Tennessee 184373, Texas, Washington MLO 237926. Heidi Slagle Points, California DBO 1666881.
She's the mortgage mom. She can get things done. When you're in need and don't know where to go, pick up the phone and call mom.
All right, well, welcome to Mortgage Mom Radio. I am Debbie Marcoux, and I have got a fantastic guest with us today. I've got Cameron Robinson with me. Say hi, Cam.
How are you?
I am great. Cameron, I have been promising all of my listeners for weeks now that I was going to have an appraiser on with us on this show. And I think that it's really, really important based on the market and where things are at that they get a perspective from, you know, an appraiser's view. We've got refinances that are happening and lots of home improvement going on. We've got purchases that are crazy busy at the moment, not enough inventory, multiple offers on every property. And really what it comes down to once we get into, you know, the process is that appraisal. It's such a big piece of it. And for a refinance, for a purchase, for both kinds of transactions. So I have been promising, and obviously you appraisers, man, you guys are hard to get a hold of, but I got you. I got you here. So this is Cam Robinson. Cam, what is the name of your appraisal company?
RR Appraisals Incorporated.
RR Appraisals Incorporated. And what I love about Cam is that he works with his dad, and that is how the Family Mortgage Mom Radio business works as well. So you guys are fantastic.
Been in the business for a long time.
Yep, you guys are fantastic. You and Rex are amazing. And thank you so much for coming on. I know it's going to be a great show. I know you're going to give lots of great information to everybody. So thank you so much for taking the time. I know, like I said, I had to hound you quite a bit.
You did. You did. Understandably. And I apologize for being so so busy. But that's the world we're in at this current moment. So I'm glad we were able to work it out. And, you know, hopefully we live up and can get them some good information.
Oh, absolutely. So this is Mortgage Mom Radio. We bring everybody all of the education, information, advice that we can. The goal of the show is to help educate borrowers, buyers, you know, anybody real estate, mortgage related, to get through the transaction, make things just a little bit easier. And, you know, we're being watched right now on Facebook and we're being watched on YouTube. So if you guys are watching us, give us a big thumbs up, put something in the feed, let us know you're here and that you're watching, you're listening. If you have not already, I learned something new with YouTube, Matt.
Oh, yeah?
I did, because, you know, I've been like all into this Bitcoin lately. Everybody's on a big Bitcoin thing, right? So I've been watching all these videos on Bitcoin, and these guys are great. I mean, they're like so energetic when they first come on with their, you know, live streams and stuff. But they keep telling everybody, make sure, you know, you subscribe to the channel and you click on the notification button, which is what I tell everybody for my YouTube page. But when you click on the notification bell, you have to actually click all. If you don't click all, they won't actually get the notification that we're on.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't know that. So I'm learning. All of you guys watching on YouTube, thank you so much. But make sure you click that all button. How are we doing? Do we have anybody saying that they're here right now?
Our very own Heidi says, hi, Cam. And hi, Deb. I'm here. And Deborah on Facebook says, good evening. Hello, Debbie. Heidi. You look very nice.
Aw, thank you so much. Hi, Heidi. And thank you so much for Debbie. That was so nice. So again, if you guys have questions at all that you want to ask Cam, please throw those into the feed. If you guys are listening to us on Saturday morning on Go Country, you guys can always check us out live Wednesdays at 5. That's where you guys get to put your questions into the feed, and we're going to answer them for you right there live with your questions. One thing that you can't see if you're listening on radio is you can't see what I look like. You can't see what I'm wearing. And I got to tell you, I'm actually wearing a pretty explicit t-shirt today. Holidays are coming. Christmas is around the corner. And this is my Christmas vacation shirt. We're not going to read it out loud, but we are the jolliest bunch of you know what's this side of town. So anyway, all right, so let's get into some great stuff. We're going to talk with Cam all about appraisals because we do have a lot of things happening right now in the market. So number one question I do have for you, I heard this from a different appraiser not too long ago, and I don't know if it was true. So I thought, you know what, I'll ask you and see if you're feeling the same thing. I was told that about 65% of the appraisals that he has been doing are for people that are leaving the state. Are you getting that at all?
Yeah. So 65 feels a little high. Of course, these are not scientific, you know,
of course, no.
Surveys per se.
Yeah.
But it feels like 50% of the purchases that we're coming in to do an appraisal for, the people are leaving.
Wow.
I researched this a couple weeks ago. I can only keep so much in my head in a weekly basis here, but I think it was in the range of 30 to 35% has been confirmed that are actually leaving. So I don't know if that's statewide, maybe because of where we're at, a certain amount of people are leaving. I'm sure those statistics vary based on the location in LA versus, you know, maybe something in Kern County, a little more rural or whatever. But yeah, it's certainly something that we are seeing. I tend to ask the owners when we come in, and like I said, it certainly feels like, and maybe 65 is more correct, but it certainly feels like at least one out of every other house, someone's leaving the state.
Wow.
Today confirms that. I had four purchases and two people leaving, two people weren't. So
crazy. I mean, I get it. California is expensive. I get it. And we've got taxes and they're talking about making taxes bigger and I so get it. But at the end of the day, we live in California. I got to just say, you know, it's hard to think about going somewhere else and replacing, you know, the weather and, you know, the scenery. And I don't know. I guess I'm from the Midwest originally, but I'm definitely a Cali girl, and I'm not leaving anytime soon. So I might go buy something somewhere else as a second home or a vacation property, you know, eventually, where you can go and, you know, spend maybe the summer for a month or two. But I don't get it. But I mean, I do, I guess, right?
You know, we tend to ask, and of course, we're kind of doing a little bit of BSing while we're there doing the appraisal. So I tend to ask people, you know, where are you going, and you know, what are your thoughts, and you know, the typical things you hear that are the typical tax havens versus California. You get the Nevadas and the Arizonas and Texas; those are kind of have been staples of people leaving because they want lower income taxes and stuff. So those are pretty common. But it's funny, then it goes in waves where you hear different states. You know, Idaho's obviously been a popular one. You hear a lot of Montana. Today, the ones leaving, ironically enough, both were going to Utah, didn't know each other. So that was kind of entertaining. It's interesting. You know, people are making changes for a variety of reasons, I'm sure. So it's just funny. I'm not sure if there's any real rhyme or reason, right? It just kind of goes in waves, at least from our perspective.
Yeah. Well, and you know, what's funny is that even with people leaving, I mean, property values are still on the rise, right? So I wanted to say hi to Brandon, Brandon Wegner. It looks like he came on, said, hi, I'm watching. Thank you so much. Karen, thank you so much. I love that you're here and that you're watching as well. I don't have all my, I mean, Karen's my mother-in-law. So I got to say, you know, my family's back at it again. I love it. But usually I've got all the family on, and they're dissing me tonight. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, that's okay. But this is Mortgage Mom Radio. If you guys have questions for Cam, make sure you put those into the feed. Matt's going to read them out loud for us so that we can get those answered for you. Cam Robinson with RR Appraisals, and he's going to talk to us all about all of the good stuff that you need to know. So let's start with purchase, Cam, because I feel like that's really an important piece right now. There are, you know, there's very little inventory. Every single property is going on the market. They're having multiple offers. When I say multiple, I'm seeing between 10 and 15 offers within the first 3 days of the property hitting the market. Obviously, it's got to be listed. It can't be outrageously priced or you're not going to get that. But when a property is listed where it should be, we're seeing multiple offers very, very quick. And the homes just are not sitting because there's not enough inventory. So the first question that I have for you is I'm seeing contracts, right? I'm on the other end of the table. I'm getting the contract, buyers applying for the loan. I'm reading through the offer. I'm reading through the counteroffer. And I'm seeing things written in there like no appraisal waiver or a buyer agrees to pay up to X dollars above the appraised value, you know, before the seller's willing to negotiate on the price. But the last house that closed, we live in California, and there are obviously some custom homes out here, but for the most part, we are tract housing, cookie cutter properties, sure, right? So how are you guys dealing with property listed at 539, property sells for 555? What are you guys doing? How are you handling that?
It's a great question. Common question, as you can imagine, and which is why we're discussing it. I'm going to try and make my answer concise. What we try to do is, ultimately, our job as appraisers is to try and reflect the buying habits of buyers in the market and considered the typical buyer, right? Not the guy who wants this specific house. He doesn't care what it costs. I'll pay anything, you know, but also not the buyer who's like, I won't buy any house unless I can get it for $25,000 under what they're offering.
Just, well, that guy's not buying a house right now.
Exactly. He's renting for a while.
Right.
So, you know, when that's what we mean by a typical buyer, right? So they're out there shopping. They're looking at stuff within a certain, you know, buyer segment or in a price range. And so they'll just go kind of visit right now. They'll obviously go kind of visit any property that's in that buyer's range. A typical market, when you have enough inventory, is going to have buyers and sellers be kind of more on a level playing field, right? Sellers are competing against other houses. Buyers are competing against a normal buyer pool. Maybe one other person wants the house. If not, you're like, oh, bummer, we'll go look at this other one that we wanted to look at anyway. That's what's different about right now. A buyer walks into a house, you know, maybe before there was a specific development or two that they really liked, or they really want to be in that area. And, you know, right now there may only be one house between the two areas that's available for, you know, that's an active listing. And chances are, if that's the case, they're walking into already having that house already receiving a bunch of offers. So that's the buying patterns and the buyer habits are a little bit different than a normal market. You have buyers who are willing to pay, you know, in some cases, full price, exactly the same as the last house that sold, but that house was totally updated. This one isn't, but they don't care. They're willing to pay a very minimal amount different, if not just same in some cases we have seen, because if it isn't an area, they don't care what it looks like. They don't care how much work it needs. They've lost six houses already. They'll pay 25 over for this one no matter what. So it takes some extra research, you know, and just a little bit more explanation to try and explain that the buyer habits and patterns are different than a normal market. And what we have to remember, and I think some appraisers forget, we have to remember that our job is to appraise a property whatever the date of that appraisal is, right? So if someone next week, it could be the Monday of next week. So when we go and we see the property, that essentially establishes our effective date. So when you have the situations that we have now, we are able to expand our parameters to try and better reflect that people are not just looking in one tiny little 1 mile radius. There's a good chance they saw a house in Valencia. They also saw a house in Canyon Country, and they also looked at a house in Saugus. Now, I'm not saying in every appraisal we have an appraisal, you know, a comp or a comparable property from, you know, 10 miles away, but people are not just normally there's like a geographic area they're trying to get into. I think right now it's pretty easy to see that most people have expanded that geography and expanded maybe what they're looking for And so therefore they're willing to pay, in some cases, like I said, full price for something that's not updated. So really what I'm, what they do and what we try to reflect is, we try to explain if there's, you know, 10 people buying, putting in offers for a property and the lowest one was 12,000 over asking, the highest was 35, you know, we don't necessarily want to come in and just be like, nope, sorry, what they listed it for was perfect. That was right on. You guys are all paying extra money or the deal's dead or they're moving to another buyer. And I'm not saying everything is justifiable, but we try to look at it and explain in our reports that, look, people are willing to pay a more, the reason they're willing to pay this, if you see a comp here that's maybe 2 miles away now, they also probably would shop in this area. And you're seeing, due to this lack of inventory, kind of an expansion of the normal radius search that we do. I know that was a bit long-winded, and I'm sure we'll go into some of those details. But in short, we're trying our best to reflect what the buyer pool is doing. Right. And every appraiser is going to look at that differently and review the data and come to their own conclusions. So I don't want to make it sound like everyone agrees exactly with how we're saying that. Some people may only stay within that development and try to stay right in there. That could be from what lenders that they've worked with that maybe say, no, we're not doing any of that. But at the end of the day, it's our job to try and come up with a good report that's defendable and pass it to the lender. And if the lender wants to fight us, we should be able to defend our position and say, no, this is, you know, our job is to reflect what the buyers are doing, you know, and we feel pretty good about this report. I know it seems higher than you expected, but that's also, you know, what the buyer felt too when they were buying the house for more than they expected.
Right. So basically, I mean, you guys have some sort of variance where you can go up from the last cookie cutter house that sold on the street with the same size lot, you know, both had a pool or whatever was going on, but you've got some sort of variance that you can go up for market condition.
Yeah. So, and it has to be, you know, I want to be clear, you know, because I don't want people to think we can just pick a comp anytime it's higher. Okay, I'll go find the higher comps, disregard everything. That's not, you know, there has to be a justification for it. And in this scenario, in most cases, it is because there's, you know, if a buyer's willing to pay $25,000 over this house and the last one sold for, you know, $10,000-$15,000 less than that, you know, how can you come up, how can you justify that? And it's like, well, you know, these people were as aware of that comparable as you and I are. And they saw that and they were willing to pay this. And guess what? They were one of 12 people willing to do that. We have to try and justify it as best we can to say, okay, well, if, you know, clearly they saw that comp, that would be included in the report. You know, and then maybe some other comparables from the buyer pool and segment that they're in, and try and say, look, you can tell from some of these other comps that when they came in and wrote this offer, the value is actually not that far off. So, or it was right on. So, you know, and we, and this is our office personally, but what we try to do is, if, you know, when you have 10, 15 people offering over asking price for a property, that's a pretty strong market indicator. You know, it's not our fault or job or anyone's problem that there's nothing to buy. I mean, that's the market indicator, and the market factors are the market factors. So it's not our job to dictate what the market is. It's our job to say, look, the market factors are what they are. There's 15 people paying, willing to pay over asking. So, you know, we try our best to reflect the market as best we can. Whereas, you know, in comparison, if you had a house that's been on the market for 30 days is a long time,
right.
But let's just say for, you know, 180 days or something like that. And their, you know, their starting point was way higher than what most would consider, you know, okay, but they stuck to it and finally found the one guy or girl who's willing to buy it, or family or whatever, and said, yeah, we'll give you that. You know, that's not as strong of an argument for true market value. You got one person willing to buy that one house. That's, you know, there's usually going to be some arguments against that. Whereas now, every house we walk into is 15 people who tried to buy the house, you know. So it's a hard argument to say, nope, sorry, it's not worth that, when you have 15 people going, I'll pay it. I don't care. I'll pay it, you know.
Right, right.
So it's, you know, yeah, at the end of the day, we're supposed to, you know, market value is determined by supply and demand, economics 101. You know, and then our job is to try and reflect that market as accurately as we can. And that doesn't always mean that we can appraise the house for the price that someone offered, you know, but we always try to. I think most appraisers understand what sort of ripples are created in the current, you know, in the water as soon as we aren't able to justify a sale price.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. No. I mean, that's,
but it does happen.
It does. And especially right now, I mean, you know, I've seen properties go $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 above where they were listed at. And sometimes it's just not possible for you guys to be able to justify and to bring that appraisal in. And that does bring everybody back to the drawing board. It brings the buyer back to the drawing board because obviously their down payment now isn't the same percentage that it was before, because now we're looking at a lower value of the home, even though the sales price is higher. So, you know, it definitely does create that ripple, like you said, and it does make a big difference. And so that's why I thought it was so important for us to really kind of zone in on that first key question, because we're just seeing so much of that right now. It really is something that we're dealing with on, you know, a daily basis with these purchases. And, you know, we've been very lucky, you know, that there are a ton of appraisers that are fantastic. Like you said, you guys are trying to do your very best to bring it in, you know, where the buyer is willing to pay for that property at. But obviously at the end of the day, you can't go, you know, so far out of tune that, you know, it's really not justifiable. So I do like that you guys are also counterbalancing with like, hey, we have to make sure that this is making sense as well.
Yeah, and that's another thing we can get into this maybe later if you want to. I don't want to get too lost in the weeds for the people listening or the people that are going to hear this, you know, but really something to keep in mind is the appraisal itself and getting, let's say you get your appraisal back and it comes in at the value. You can't believe it. Everyone's excited. Off we go, right? We're going to, you know, get ready, call the movers, honey. We're getting ready to do everything. We're in the final home stretch. One thing to keep in mind is that our appraisals get scrutinized far more than they ever used to. So as soon as our appraisal comes in, everyone may be excited. Maybe we feel like we have a strong, justifiable report that brings it in $25,000 over the asking price, but we feel the report is actually justifiable and we can defend it if someone were to question it. What people need to understand is there are processes that happen after our appraisal is delivered that review our report. One big portion of that is from Fannie and Freddie themselves, who whether your buyers know or your listeners know, basically own 75% of the mortgages in the country, maybe more at this point with all the quantitative easing. So that's one big, you know, a review system that looks at our appraisal. And then there's another one, obviously, which is your underwriters. Your underwriters may look at that and not really agree with how we cut from point A to point B as well. So we have had appraisals where, you know, we sent them in and we thought it was a good report, but this system that Fannie and Freddie run every appraisal through did not agree. I want to be clear, it's a computer system. So we have our own quarrels with that, and that's another discussion. But if it doesn't rate our appraisal in a good light, usually what that triggers is what's called a, you know, some sort of follow-up, either field review or some sort of review of our appraisal from another appraiser.
Right.
And so it can get cut. Our value can get cut by that other appraiser if they don't agree with it. And, you know, even if we feel we have a very strong argument in our favor or we can defend our report, 9 times out of 10, an underwriter is going to go with the lower value just out of conservatism anyway.
Yeah.
So
and
things to think about.
Yeah, no. And I'm happy that you brought that up because it is something that is very important for everybody to understand. I mean, this show is all about the education, the advice. We're teaching you what happens in the process of a loan. And one of the things that does happen is even though your appraisal comes in, like Cameron said, it's going to go through underwriting and the credit underwriter does have to review that. And, you know, they could very well cut that value or there might be repair work in the appraisal that needs to be taken care of. You know, you guys saw some health and safety issues or some, you know, I don't know, mold, or you saw some roof leaks, or, you know, you saw some things that would cause some concern that need to be checked out, that the appraisal can be subject to either those repairs or some sort of an inspection to verify that there are no active, you know, issues or roof leaks or, you know, things that could be happening. So it is really, really important that you are communicating with your lender, because when that appraisal comes in, you're going to get a notification, hey, here's a copy of your report, but you need to make sure that everything's been signed off, it's been underwritten, it's been approved before you go ahead and you remove that appraisal contingency from your purchase contract. So just kind of want to throw that in there since you happen to bring that up. It's you know, again, all about just kind of teaching and training and educating.
Sorry, I hope I did. And yeah, that's a whole complicated, we could spend an entire show talking about that, so I don't want to. I know there's, I don't want to get lost in the weeds on that.
No, it's
so
okay.
I'll go as in depth as you would like. You tell me.
Yeah, yeah.
Got a couple comments on Facebook. Chris says hello, Debbie, and Aunt Lori says I'm here having a hard time on YouTube. Moved over to Facebook. Deb, your hair is so cute.
Oh well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Hey guys, wherever you guys want to watch us, you can watch us on Twitch. You can watch us on YouTube. You can watch us on Facebook. Make sure you guys are liking the page, subscribing to the channel, turn on your notifications, and like I said, I just learned a couple days ago, you got to hit that all button to know when we are live. So make sure you guys do that. I've got Cam Robinson with RR Appraisals. He's on with us right now, educating us all about the appraisal process and, you know, how things are rolling. So if you have any questions whatsoever, get those in the feed. If you guys are watching, you haven't said hi already, please feel free to do that. I want to know you guys are here and you're checking it out. So Cam, let's move on. And that was purchase. And obviously we'll get back to purchase because I want to talk to you about closing cost credits and, you know, all that good stuff, but sure. We'll get to that. But I want to talk about refinance for a minute. And I want to talk about, because a lot of people right now are doing home improvements. They're not selling their homes, which is why we have a shortage of inventory. They're all staying home. They're saying, hey, we've got to live in this house. We're working from home. We're teaching our kids from home. You know, we're spending day in and day out in this property. We need to clean it up. Mm-hmm. It's time. I got to do my kitchen. I've got to, you know, we've got to put in a new roof. Maybe it's time for some solar panels. I want to rewire the house with internet so that we're not on Wi-Fi. You know, we want to be hard connected, right? So they're doing a lot of work, a lot of home improvement. And I want you to talk a little bit about how home improvement changes the value. And again, I'm not talking about, you know, custom homes and custom properties. Obviously, there is a lot of that everywhere. You know, I mean, anybody that's watching me right now, it's not just California. It's not just Santa Clarita where I'm based. You're based, right? But, you know, we're all across the country. People are watching the show. They're listening. They're tuning into the podcast. But here in our direct area, Arizona, Nevada, Washington, a lot of the areas where we're doing a lot of business are cookie cutter tract housing. So if you have somebody that is, and you mentioned, you know, about that purchase, you know, they're going to buy the house that wasn't upgraded, even though the last one was, and they're going to pay more for the, you know, they're paying almost the same price for the property, but it's still original from, you know, the 70s. Let's say somebody goes in and they just fully, just completely update the house everywhere, drop $100,000 into this, you know, tract house. How does that really work out for you when you're doing that appraisal? You know, how much really can you give them? Because I know it's not dollar for dollar.
Totally. That's a very good question, very fair question, and obviously a very common question, especially from the people who just dropped $120,000 doing their house. So the way I like to describe how we look at upgrades or updates is this. I tell people the easiest way to explain it is we basically separate houses into kind of three different categories, right? So your lowest category are going to be houses that, you know, this is your range in that lowest level. You're going to have stuff that's dilapidated, needs a ton of work. You know, this is person probably an investor purchase, but you know, sometimes a family will buy it and want to spend the money to do it and take advantage of the equity once they've done so. But you know, a house that has probably needs a bunch of work, hasn't been painted, hasn't been updated, all that stuff. So it needs repair and it hasn't been touched is probably going to be at the lowest end of your sales spectrum. Then in that same category on the higher end, it might be a house, like you said, built in the 70s. Maybe it's original. Well kept, though. You know, there's not like you don't have to move in and fix a bunch of stuff, but it's just dated.
Right.
Right. So that's kind of that range.
Yeah. You still got your shag category. Carpet and your orange, you know, appliances.
But
it's all working.
You know, Grandma took great care of her shag carpet and you'd have to replace it.
Right. Your swamp cooler.
So that's kind of that lower. Exactly. Swamp cooler, but it hasn't been used a ton. Maybe they didn't care. So it's in good shape still. So that's kind of that lower tier, right? Then you're going to have like your middle tier, which I would say most homes usually fall somewhere within this tier. And that's where you're going to have houses that have been, you know, well kept and have some updates. You know, we just put all new flooring in, but you haven't touched the kitchen or the bathrooms. Stuff. Think of stuff like that. And that's what most people do because they kind of do updates here and there. You know,
as they go.
When either they need to.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, when the money, when they save up enough money to do it, right? Not everyone's ready to just drop $100,000 on their house all the time. So they might do the flooring when they make, you know, have a good year in business or at work. And then maybe the next year they plan on doing the two bathrooms, you know, that sort of thing. That's kind of what in that middle tier, you're going to have houses that are generally, you know, have some updates in good shape, don't require really a lot of repair. And then the higher end of that middle tier will be houses that maybe were updated, but maybe like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, right? So you can tell usually trends change. We all know that.
Whitewash cabinets aren't cool anymore, but they're probably in great shape. Yeah,
exactly. But in good shape, you can tell they put in their granite, you know, 10 years ago, but it's nice. It's not, you know, but you can usually, if you look at a lot of houses, especially as a buyer, you probably start to recognize some of the decades of when certain things were installed. You'll notice it like we do.
Right.
And then obviously you're going to have your top tier, which are houses that, you know, essentially are going to be at the top of the market, have the most updates, if not completely updated. And that's going to be kind of in that highest tier of valuation. And so the reason I explain that is because, you know, it's really hard. I wish we were this good, but it's really hard for us to go say, hey, I had a guy tell me today, really nice guy. I'm doing refinance on this house. It's like, hey, I just put in all these new windows. I just put in these new gates and these new fences. And in my head, I'm going, that stuff's all great and makes it, you know, the house is awesome, looks great. But, you know, for us to give a straight adjustment, quote unquote, which is something we have to get from the market, we wouldn't just give you an adjustment for having updated windows and a new fence. Now, I'm not trying to say don't do that and that stuff's not important. I'm saying we look at stuff more in an overall condition idea. And like I said, I wish we were so good and the market provided us with enough data that we could kind of make adjustments on a dollar for dollar basis or stuff like that.
Right, right.
But it's just not really realistic. Because as soon as you make an argument for the adjustment, I could probably give you five against it, you know, or give you five comps to say it didn't mean anything. So I know people don't like to hear that. I try to explain it that way in the nicest way possible. The other thing I like to tell people is don't look at updates and everything on your house as like, you know, if I spend, you know, $2,000 doing this our downstairs bathroom, you know, how's that going to help my value? We don't, it's not really like that. Think of thing, you know, first of all, nothing's dollar for dollar. Almost, and everyone knows this, the pool is the easiest way to explain it to people who aren't in the business. If everybody is, it's common knowledge that you're going to spend $100,000 on a mediocre pool, right? A decent pool, nothing
right.
crazy,
right.
But nothing, not a cheap little tiny pool. You'll spend $100,000, no problem. And they know you're not going to get $100,000 in the market. Your house doesn't go up $100,000 when you do that. So I use a pool as an example because it's such common knowledge that like most updates, you are not going to get your money that you spent out of that in full. Now, that being said, what I tell people is think of moving your house from tier to tier. That's how you will get the most bang for your buck, right? That's the easiest way to explain kind of how the update thing goes. You know, if you're in that lower tier, you're going to have a lot more of a chance for improvement because you just have more improvements to do. And higher, you know, more of a range to kind of slide up. If you're already near the top, you know, let's just say your house is, we did a house the other day that was totally updated. Everything was in great shape, new flooring, new paint, you know, the bathrooms are redone, but they hadn't touched your kitchen. That was the last thing they were saving, right? And understandably, because usually it's the most expensive, you know. So that's the type of thing where we might look at the kitchen, because the kitchen being such a big ticket item, typically an update, we might make an adjustment of condition for something like that, let's just say 5,000 or 10,000 or something like that. But, you know,
what
there's
I guess
not enough.
Yeah. So I guess like, what do you really see though? Like, let's say that you've got a house that is in the top tier. I mean, it is just beautiful. It is Ritz-Carlton'd out. You know, you walk through the door and you think somebody's going to hand you a towel to wipe your face, right? Or to, you know, put the booties on your feet. What is the difference between that house and your middle of the road average, has kept it up, updated the bathrooms, hasn't done the kitchen yet, but it's got new floors. What are you really getting the difference, right? Between those homes? I mean, how much really can you go up? And I'm going to explain why I'm asking these questions, but you know, what are we talking a percentage or a dollar amount? If you got one house on the street and the identical house and you've got the two different categories, I mean, assuming that everything else is the same floor plan, same exact pool, same exact landscape, same everything. Are you talking 20,000, 10,000, 30,000? You know, how much room do you really have that you can change that value?
That's a great question. I'm going to answer it as unambiguously as I possibly can.
I love it.
Which is basically a disclaimer that it's going to be somewhat ambiguous.
Right.
what we would do in that scenario, or really in any scenario, is we should do our best to try and find some comparable that is similar to house A versus, and, you know, compared, oh, and house B, really, right? And so if you have two closed sales and you can see really directly in the market, hopefully not too different from each other as far as the dates of sale, right? Because we know the market can change pretty quickly, especially right now. Right. So you're hoping they're within a month or two of each other. And then you can really try and extrapolate from those sale prices what that difference is. And like I said, it, you know, I'm not intentionally trying to give everyone a headache on not answering the question directly, but there's been times where we've seen houses in that lowest tier sell for the same as the ones in the highest tier.
Okay, hold on.
Even we're sitting there signing a report call, and this ain't gonna fly. But right. You know, we're gonna deal with the flack when it comes. But that's what the market shows.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And we're seeing that the differences between.
Hey, Cam, hold on.
Know, tier
hey,
three.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Are we having a sound problem?
Yeah, we just lost sound for a second.
Okay.
So,
so anybody out there? Oh, yep. Heidi said she lost sound. So we're going to see what we can do to try to get back.
Oh, no worries.
Yeah. it's honestly this Zooming thing. It's, you know, everybody's trying to do everything, you know, where you can't, like, usually I would have had you come in and we just do it right here together and, you know.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel bad. I'm literally sitting next to where my internet is, and every once in a
while
it starts to say your signal sucks. I'm like, what? Okay.
Yeah. It's not you. It's just it's the equipment, honestly.
It's the world we live in.
All right. So hopefully, cool. Hopefully everybody that was watching before will be able to find the new link and keep watching. But no, Cam, and that's awesome. And the reason that I was asking you those questions, to be honest, was, you know, I have people that are calling me about refinances that have done all of this massive work, you know, and they're, I put $100,000 into it and I'm pulling up Redfin and Zillow and Realtor.com. Obviously, I'm not an appraiser, but I still have to have some sort of idea when I put this loan together that the value is there, right? That I'm doing somebody the justice. I'm not spending their money on an appraisal for a loan that's never going to go, never going to close. So, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm seeing 640 and they're telling me their house is worth 750. And then I'm saying, well, you know, I'm not seeing that, you know, is there something, did you add a bathroom? Did you add a bedroom? You know, a lot of times that information isn't going to show up on those public websites. Right. So that obviously is going to give you some more value. And many times they'll say, well, no, I mean, I just put $100,000 into my house. Okay. That's good. And we hope that you love it and that you plan to stay there forever and that you're not leaving because really I want people to hear me and say, improvements are for you. Improvements are for your way of life. Improvements are for you to enjoy where you live and nowadays where you work and where you school and where you eat. And, you know, we're not going out to restaurants and we're not sending the kids off to school and we're not going off to our offices. Everybody's working remote. And, you know, so you're spending a lot of time at home and it is fantastic to keep that house up and the pride of homeownership. But don't think if you put in $100,000, you're going to get your $100,000 out. You're just not. I mean, in my opinion, and obviously we can't give numbers, right? Because every single house is so different and the upgrades that they do are different. And one person did wood and one person did tile and one person did quartz, but the other person did marble. I mean, so you can't really put a dollar on it, right? But I would say if you're in a 2,000 square foot tract house and you're basically exactly the same as your neighbor and your neighbor just sold for $700,000 and it was dated, but in great shape, but dated, and your house is absolutely to the nines of beautiful, brand new done, I can't see getting more than $30,000 more.
I think you're absolutely right. I think $30,000 is, and I'm sure some of the people watching might, you know, start trying to dox me and figure out where I live when I say this, but it might not even be that. And so that's why what we really should be doing as appraisers is, again, we're praying in a scenario like that, we have a thing that we can go off of to say, okay, here's one that's completely updated. And of course, we know from experience, it's never so perfect that you have a model match that's like everything's the same except for the condition. It just doesn't work like that. So our job is to try and kind of sift through those comps, throw out ones that are not really good market indicators in any way for us, and maybe find one that's bigger and has been updated, and then try and extract out the square footage difference. And then how much of, you know, really the differences, let's just say, square footage and condition, and try and extract out what the percentage of the difference is allotted to the square footage versus what is the percentage that's allotted to the condition. So that's what we're supposed to try to do. I think the scenario you present is very realistic. I can think of appraisal. I can think of an appraisal off the top of my head where the guy just spent, you know, a typical thing. Everyone's home from COVID. So they're like, screw this. We're updating the house. We can't stand to be here. We should have done this years ago. And he spent like 150 grand doing his house, you know, and up the street was a house that was updated as well that sold for, you know, 780. And so we appraised his for around that same price, you know, but he was upset because he had a view. And so we're like, well, that's true.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a bummer because I knew as soon as I walked out of that property, I'm like, this is going to be really tough. Because there's like three houses on this entire street that have that view. So we're going to have to go somewhere else to try and extrapolate what a view maybe similar would bring, you know, and when there's not a good market indicator to say that, unfortunately, we can't just make it up. We have to prove it.
Right.
So if unfortunately we're kind of working with what we have in every appraisal. Sometimes we have great comps that really show that everything you did is worth a ton and the market is responding really well to those things. Or those updates, or the view, or the pool, or whatever. And then a lot of times we don't. We have to work with the comp pool that's there and try and extrapolate as best we can. And it's not a perfect science. You know, a lot of, you know, I think when people ask me about appraising, they think it, almost like the Wizard of Oz, behind the curtain is just some extravagant operation, you know, that of all this high level math and technology. And,
right.
And,
yeah. There's nothing that's in your appraiser's book that says a view you add X
is this.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
And God, would our lives be easier if it were? But it's just not the reality. The market, every market is different. And as you literally keep condensing your market down to even the track, it changes. So that's why what we have to do is sift through all that data and try and pull out what we think is the most relevant to the report. So yeah, you know, I digress. Your scenario is a good one. And I tell people, I have friends of mine, one of them is a designer. She's thinking about putting this Italian marble tile flooring in. She's saying, what do you think that's going to get me in the market? I'm like, not even close to what you're going to pay to put it in.
The same as so the Home Depot tile will give you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I said, please do it and enjoy it. If it's going to make you happy, do it. Enjoy it. Don't look at stuff like that as like, you know, how much am I going to get out of the market in this? Most repairs or upgrades to your house, most, not all, are not going to get you back for just that one thing that you would get in the market. That's
right.
What I try to tell people.
Yeah.
Do stuff that makes you happy. Enjoy your house.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, we had some problem with the sound. So we literally had to like get out of Facebook and YouTube and Twitch. Uh-oh. And then we had to get back in and we're back in and everybody's starting to say hi that they're back. So Heidi, I know you're listening to Cam and I guarantee you've got some questions you want to throw into that feed. So please do that for us. Heidi's usually on the show with me, but since we had you on today, she's typing away in the background. So I want her to actually throw some feedback in here.
Oh,
I know.
I'm sorry.
No. Absolutely not. This is fantastic. You're great. And Heidi loves it when she doesn't actually have to get on the show. So it is no sweat off her back, trust me. And it looks like Deborah's back in and my Aunt Pam came to town. So there's a little bit more of my family that's watching. I love that. If you guys have questions for Cam, awesome. Please put them in the feed. We'd love to answer them for you. You guys are listening Saturday morning on Go Country. I hope you guys are enjoying this. This is Cam Robinson with RR Appraisals. I always call him Cam. It's Cameron. But Cam knows what he's talking about. He knows his stuff. We've got Carrie Margulies on. She says, I'm here. Love the topic. So Carrie's actually another mortgage mom. She works for the team, one of my loan officers. Carrie's just an absolute doll. She's amazing. And so we've got some people all jumping back in right now to let us know. She's telling me she loves my hair. So, hey, guys, you know, if you're listening Saturday morning and you can't see me, you got to go over to YouTube and you got to see what my hair looked like because everybody's commented about it today. No, this is such great stuff, Cam. And everybody listening, guys, you have questions, you know, feel free to reach out, get on my calendar, schedule an appointment. It's all about a consultation. Let's talk about your house. If you want to do improvements, upgrades, you're buying a house, you're having to bid over the cost of what, you know, is listed for sale. Those are all of the things that we're talking about today. Call the office, get on the books, talk to me. So it's 844-935-935. 3634. If you guys are on YouTube or you're on Facebook, please hit the like button. That does help my algorithm. Please subscribe to the channel, turn on your notifications, and make sure you click that all button so that you do know when we go live. So Cam, back to the improvements, because I think that that's a big topic. And I think people buying homes want to do improvement. I think it was great that we touched on the fact that, you know what, do it to love it, to live in it, for pride of homeownership, to enjoy where you are, but don't do it thinking that you're going to get dollar for dollar in your investment that you put in. Truly, it just doesn't work that way. But one of the things that I do want to ask, so Heidi's saying, and I only don't like being on live because I don't ever look as good as you, Deb. All right, thanks, Heidi. I appreciate it. But one of the things that is a big deal right now that people are doing, so number one, let's talk about the garage, because there's a lot of, you know, garage going on, right? So let's, you know, yes, say that you've got just nothing but rafters and there's no insulation. And then you've got the house that's got the, you know, it's fully, you know, drywalled and beautiful cabinets all over the place and the built-in, you know, sink for the laundry. Is this giving us an upgrade, or is this going to be kind of similar to, hey, the house down the street that's the same cookie cutter with the regular old garage, you're not really getting much out of that? I guess what I'm trying to figure out from you is, where can we pull? Maybe what's the best places to put the money if we're hoping for, sure, the return in the investment?
Great question. So garages are, you know, obviously in you know, I'm speaking to what I know, which is, you know, Southern California here. Especially now with COVID and kids being at home and having to do school from different rooms and all this stuff, garages, as you can imagine, have become a top priority for finishing. And I know personally from experience, my office
is now your garage is now your office. Yeah,
that was always in the plans, but just not a priority until I had two kids on different Zooms in different rooms. I got kicked out. So I know the feeling. And I finished my garage, I don't mind sharing that just to give some of your people an idea of how much it will cost. We insulated, drywall, paint, all that stuff. And then we're putting an air conditioner in there. And I would say in total, we spent about $6,200-ish. So at least then people have an idea of what you might spend if you really do.
I need your contractor. That's amazing. We're going to get your contractor's name.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, I should share it. Although I know he's busier and I'll get up too. So, but the point I make is that, that is something that is going to be kind of what we call a buyer or a personal preference. Not everyone, you know, there are plenty of people out there who are going to walk in and see your garage all nice and spick and span with your epoxy floor and all this nice stuff and go, I don't care, I'm parking my car in here. There's other buyers who are going to come in and say, oh, honey, we can use this as extended living space. Those are two polar opposite views on those. The point I'm making is it's really difficult to extract a value on how much value you're going to get out of that in the market. I want to be clear. You know, we consider those things marketing features, which is, you know, if house A, and now the hard part is marketing features are not quite as popular as they usually are in a traditional market because you're not competing with anyone right now. So anything you have, if you have your garage done, people are going to buy it. If you have it not done, they're probably going to buy it.
Right.
So these marketing features in a normal market, you would say, hey, house A down the street that is a similar size and similar condition, but ours has a totally finished garage, that would help you kind of get the buyer to say, I'm going to write on this house, not that other one. So it's always funny to, you know, the market truly kind of indicates what the value is for all of these things. I think most people prefer their garage finish nowadays. I think that's a fair assessment, and a fair conclusion. One thing you have to remember, though, is that anything basically that's been built from about 2000 until now, so really the last 20 years, builders have been required to finish the garage anyway. So, you know, it's not like you're finding a house that's got a finished garage and that's just a gem in the rough. You know, all these houses don't. It's not as uncommon as we used to think. So it's hard to maybe justify how much value that really will bring in the market.
Right.
But like I
Oh, we might have lost him. Hopefully he'll come back, and if not, he'll jump out and maybe jump back in. Yeah. And
sense for you guys.
Oh, there he is. There he is. Nope, we lost you for a second, and then all of a sudden, oh, and there goes his picture. But there we go. He's back. So Cam, Heidi's actually got a question for you. Can you hear us?
Uh-oh.
Oh,
frozen again.
I think we're frozen again. So Heidi, your question was, and I'm going to read it, and then maybe he'll jump back
is
in.
Is it me freezing? I'm
there
sorry.
You go. No, you're okay. Okay, can you hear me though? Are you good?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I'm back. I'm caught up. I'm sorry. Okay. Just had a little bit of jumbling. So I'm sorry if I went too long.
There. No. You're totally fine. So Heidi did have a question for you. It's a great question because we do get it a lot. She said, I know so many of our clients want to know why you can't use the current listings as comps instead of having to use the sales.
Great question. Very common question. We're doing a refinance. The homeowner tells me down the street there's a house listed for $900,000. And I say, that's fantastic. But basically what we do with listings, we should primarily base our value on closed sales. Because if you really think about it, and here's the argument as to why, you can list your house for anything you want, right? You may have a neighbor down the street who hears voices and the voices told him his house is worth $1 million when the last sale in your neighborhood was $620,000, you know? So He could put it up for $1 million. That don't mean it's going to close there, and we all know that. So that's why while the pending or listings that we include in an appraisal, which is usually minimal, right? If we're writing a report with six comparables, four of those are going to be closed, you know, primarily, and then you know one or two listings or pending sales. We consider those all kind of active properties, and so the primary basis for your value is going to come from those closed sales. And as we both know, and as your buyers know, you don't know what the house is going to close for. You don't know if it's going to sell. We've done one where we got in, we sent in the appraisal. We didn't know, but the inspector actually found that they had foundation issues. Needless to say, that changed that sale, and they got pulled off the market. Everything stopped, and they had to obviously make some very hefty repairs before they were able to put it back on. So that's just one example, but that's why we can't use those as a primary basis evaluation. That being said, there are times where we've done appraisals and the actives and pendings are all closing at some point in the next week or two for higher than asking price, you know, and so we've all been there. So if you can kind of, it's all up to the appraiser to present a good picture. If you want to, you know, we have done appraisals where we've included three closed and three pendings or three listings, and said, look, you can see based on the market, we kind of use those as our justification for coming in higher than, you know, in our range of closed sales. We come in at the top end, and it's because the current actives or listings are kind of saying, look, here's where the market's currently headed, you know, and so therefore we're coming in a little bit higher. But yes, the short answer to that question is you can't just say, hey, my neighbor down the street's listed for $750. The last sale was $625, so I think, you know, we're worth $725, $730. You know, it's like, well, let's see what your neighbor sells his house for first, and then we can go from there.
Yeah, let's see it where it actually closes, and then we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Okay, so where I personally think that your best value is in if you have the money and you're trying to figure out what do I do with it, which obviously, again, if you're living in the home and like my house, I just finished an update. It was built in the early 80s. Nothing had been touched in the bathrooms. You know, the kitchen needed to be redone. The plumbing was starting to fall apart. You know, so I had a lot of work to do, just typical upkeep because of the house. So I put in a lot of money that I'm not going to see come back. But, you know, if I didn't have to do all of those things, where would I put my money if I wanted to see some sort of a return for it? I would add a bedroom. Sure. I would add a bathroom. And then the ADUs right now, which we've talked a lot about ADUs on this show before. And everybody asks us, what does ADU stand for? So it is a... Give it to me. I know you know it, Cam.
Accessory dwelling unit.
Thank you. I always want to call it something different. Okay, accessory dwelling unit. But it is basically like your she shed or your man cave that's out in the backyard, mm-hmm. or it's your mother-in-law's quarters, right? something like that is going to bring in quite a bit more value. But the question that I have is, talk about appraising that, Cam, because, you know, we've only got, like, I don't know, 6 minutes left, and we'll go over if we have to and keep going. And, you know, the show on Go Country will finish on Saturday morning. And if they're listening, they can go back to YouTube and hear how this plays out. But this is a really hot topic right now, because they have finally come out and they're pretty much giving a lot of leeway in getting these put in and giving permits for them. And they are bringing added value, but it's not necessarily changing your property from, you know, a one unit to a two unit. You know, you're still a single family home. I know that comping it out with that is a little bit difficult, because you got to try to find a house that's got one similar, right? But talk a little bit about these ADUs, because it is a big thing right now. A lot of people are doing it. It is great for the property. It really is for the value. So give me your thoughts on that one.
Sure. And the good news on that front is, just recently, and I could be wrong on this, but I'm pretty confident that what I, one of the sources I was reading was that I think Gavin Newsom has signed an executive order basically overriding any zoning regulation to allow you to build an ADU. So on any single family. So if you're in an R1 residential area, and I think LA County had some of this stuff already, but just to...
Yeah, but think about all of the homes. Think about all the homes with the associations. What about the HOAs that say you can't? I mean, is this something that's saying, sorry, HOAs, but you can?
I know. It's really, those are, like any kind of executive order action like that, you go, well, wait a minute, how's this going to work here or there? You know, those are all questions that are going to have to be answered. But LA County has been very proactive about trying to get builders and single family homeowners that, making it super easy for them to convert their garages into an accessory dwelling unit and stuff like that. So appraising them is a challenge like anything else, and even like pools being more common. So they're a little easier to appraise, but a house with an ADU is becoming more common, which is making our lives a little bit easier on the appraisal side to get you value out of the money you're going to spend, which is probably a pretty good amount to get one built or converted. So that's really what we have to do. Just like any sort of amenity, we have to do what's called bracket it, meaning we have a comp that has it, hopefully as close to possible every other characteristic, and then one that doesn't, and hopefully as close to possible with every characteristic. So that way you can kind of extract your market value from it. House A with an ADU sells for $650. House B, no ADU, everything else ideally similar or the same, and that sells for $625. There's your very simple market extraction of about $25,000 there. So that's really kind of how we look at them. You said they're becoming more common all the time, so that's helping us. But generally speaking, they do provide a pretty good amount.
Yeah, I mean, I would guess. I mean, I know you were. Yeah, I know you were just giving us, an idea right now. You're just kind of throwing numbers out there to just kind of give us an idea to understand what you were explaining. But I can't imagine that a house with an ADU would only give you maybe $25,000 over a house without one. But then it's just like the pool; it's a $100,000 pool, and it might give you $20,000. So that it is. But again, at least you are getting a little bit more out of the investment that you're putting in. Plus, you're getting that added benefit of that extra unit back there,
Yeah, and the really difficult thing here is, don't be mad at your appraiser if he doesn't give you the value you think it's there or that you think it's worth. I mean, everyone's got their opinions, and that's totally fair. We expect that in our profession. We're coming in to give you ideally a very well, well-educated opinion on something. But we are also limited to the data that we have. Right. And we both know rarely can we tell just from MLS listing or talking to an agent how well an ADU was done. So that's the other thing. And like a pool, you could spend $40,000 on a pool and put in just kind of the most basic thing that you can, not very big. And then you could also spend $140,000 on a pool, so it's not always necessarily an apples to apples comparison. There's a big difference between throwing up some drywall and non-permitted, tapping off your water line to kind of get a sink in there, and then throwing a gas line in there that's connected to your, teeing off your stove in your house and then essentially making your garage kind of a haphazard ADU, compared to someone who goes out and really does it right, gets it permitted, and probably will spend, especially if it's detached, probably spend over $100,000. So that's why, you know, our job is to hopefully sift through that and realize, you know, not all things are equal just because they have the same name. You know, and so, it, you know, it all comes down to a research project. And the problem is a lot of times agents aren't always very forthcoming in their MLS descriptions. They're very shrewd about how they write things to make them, you know, they're salespeople. That's what they're supposed to do. They're right. supposed to get them top dollar for their house. So I don't fault them for that. But sometimes it makes our job almost impossible to really gauge, you know, what we're talking about and if it really is comparable.
Yeah.
You know, so that's something to keep in mind. But the ADUs are certainly a popular item right now. And the good news is more and more people are doing them. And even if they're not permitted, you know, we can kind of give them evaluation based on if they're done well. And we can tell when they're done well or just done like quickly by,
right,
you know,
right.
to be handy.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so this is Mortgage Mom Radio on Saturday morning, Go Country 105. We are done right now here, but we are going to keep going on YouTube. So Wednesdays at 5, watch us live. That way you guys don't miss any of the show. If you want to hear what me and Cam continue to talk about, go to YouTube right now, pull up the show from Wednesday, and you guys can continue to listen to me and Cam talk about appraisals, ADUs. I'm going to get into a really big one, which is the unpermitted work, like you were just talking about, the haphazard stuff. And so if you want to know, you know, more about that, make sure you guys go to YouTube, subscribe to the channel, turn on your notification buttons, make sure you click that all. Give us a like on the video if you guys are watching us. We really appreciate that. And we hope you have a fantastic Saturday. But for everybody watching right now live, stay with us because this is the big question for you, Cam. So yeah. You've got all of these people that are, you know, they're looking at homes and they did change the garage into a dwelling unit and they did put in a stove with a gas line and they did add a bathroom with a toilet and a shower. So now you've got sewer, right? And I get it. You know, I mean, we're all trying to expand as many places as we can. And California is expensive. And we've got a lot of families that are, you know, living together. You've got two families, you know, multiple families living together in one place. So how do you handle that as an appraiser when you walk into a home to appraise and you've got unpermitted work that is done?
Absolutely. So this is a loaded question. I'm gonna try not to be too long-winded with the answer, but it's kind of obviously a complex issue, which is why we're discussing it in the first place. First thing I always try to lay out at the outset is that one thing that HUD makes very clear is permits are not required in order for them to ultimately buy the loan or receive the loan, which is, you know, HUD is kind of a parent of Fannie and Freddie, GSEs. We won't get into that. But HUD basically lays out the groundwork for how all these companies work and what they will accept, what they won't, that sort of thing. So HUD makes it very clear, you know, verifying or verification of permits is not a requirement. And technically, it's beyond the scope of work for an appraisal. So that's one thing to keep in mind. That being said, most appraisers are going to automatically go through the process of trying to verify permits. It's just part of their scope. It's part of their own personal scope of work, and that's totally fine. Most will. Now, that being said, while HUD will accept things without permits, not every lender will lend on stuff without permits, or at least allow us to give value to stuff that has not been permitted or work that has not been permitted, especially when you're talking about something large like an ADU, you know, or an addition or something along those lines. So that's good for buyers or borrowers to really talk to their lender, maybe find that stuff out ahead of time, because there are lenders who will not accept that stuff and will not accept value being given to those sorts of things. We argue with them because that's our job, is not to write an appraisal based on whatever the lender wants us to write. Our job is to write an appraisal based on what the market reflects. But I tell people that because you'd hate to find, you're buying this house, it's got this unpermitted addition, but that's great. It makes the house bigger. It's done really well. It looks like it was original construction, you know, and you're excited. You're paying more than the house next door, which is a model match, but doesn't have that. You're willing, you think it's totally safe. And then your lender at the last minute goes, you know, is
pull it all out, pull it all out.
Yeah. Yeah. No value, right. No value. We won't lend on it. You know what I mean?
So yeah. Not only that, but you got to pull it out and cap the gas line and, you know, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and that happens, and that's an FHA thing too, right? So that's another discussion that I'm sure we could go down.
Right, and a lot of people to understand when Cam is talking about HUD, HUD is different than FHA. So, you know, it is different. A lot of times those two names and words can be intermingled and interchanged, but they are actually different. Yep. HUD is the Housing of Urban Development, and FHA is different. So FHA is a different kind of government-backed mortgage where they've got different appraisal requirements and property requirements. So it's something that happens. Yeah.
I assume everyone knows the difference, right?
Right.
When it comes to the unpermitted stuff, and we all know somebody who's done something like that in an unpermitted way, cause they didn't want to pay the permit fees and all this stuff. Cause they can add up very quickly, especially, I mean, you'll spend $2,000 on permits for an ADU, no problem, maybe more depending on how you're doing it and where it is. So I get that people sometimes want to save that money. What we're supposed to do is try and assess the property in a way that, are the additions or is the unpermitted work being done and takes the property out of conformity with the neighborhood? That's kind of our biggest kind of assessment. We'll look at it and say, so by that I mean, an ADU doesn't fall under that category. Converting your garage to an ADU or something like that is not going to put you in that category, because generally speaking, most areas now, everyone knows at least one person with an ADU. So that's good. But if you were, let's say your house is in a development that ranges from 1500 to, I think, let's say the biggest model in that development is 2100, right? Let's say you got one of the biggest lots in that development, you got a corner on a cul-de-sac or something. So you have a 12,000, 13,000 square foot lot. Everyone else is on like 8 or 7. And you're like, I got the room. I match all the codes. I'm going to go out and build a 1,000 square foot addition. Great. Sounds awesome. The problem with that is then now you are 2,700 square feet and every other house, the biggest houses in your development are 21. That may see, you may think that's awesome. Mine's going to be worth the most in the development. No problem. And that's probably true, but it's probably not going to be in the realm of where you're thinking compared to the last house that sold or those other big houses. So, and when we're looking at something that's unpermitted, if you're so much larger than everything, you become what's called an overdevelopment for the area. And you no longer become what's called a conforming home. That's when you're going to run into some problems, because we can't say, the buyers would just look at this the same as they look at that house and that house. You know what I mean? You probably have to go to a different development to make your explanations, and that's not always going to fly, even if it is a good justifiable argument. But, not every lender is going to accept that, and depending on how your appraiser describes it and approaches it, just how they paint the picture could very well kill your deal. So, and they may not be doing anything wrong in how they approach it. So those are all things to keep in mind. I always recommend getting stuff permitted, but we all know people who haven't permitted things. I mean, one of the best ones I've ever seen was a contractor in Castaic, lived in a nice tract home in Castaic, actually put a second story on his house without permits, which was really fun when they went to sell, let me tell you. When you change your house, a good example is people know in the Valley, you see people buying a 1,200 square foot house on a half an acre and tearing it down overnight, except for one wall, and then making that into a 4,000 square foot mansion. So that if you drive through, say, Studio City or Tarzana, you'll go down these old streets and you have, tiny house, 4,000 square foot, tiny house, And so that's just kind of the trend down there and is happening more and more. But in Santa Clarita and stuff like that, you just don't want to make that sort of mistake per se, because you're not going to have many developments where you could add on a second story. And if nothing else has a second story, guess what? You're probably not getting your money out of that.
Right.
It's going to be rough.
Right. Yeah. No. Okay. Well, hey, it basically the bottom line is if you want to do it, get it permitted. I think honestly,
ideally,
at the end of the day,
do that.
Yeah.
If not, do everything to code anyway. Everyone knows somebody who's a contractor, a buddy. Do all the stuff to code. And then at least maybe even if you want to retroactively go get your permits, you take some pictures, maybe say, hey, help me here. I don't want to tear it down or open all the walls. But here, we did it all to code. I didn't have the money to do the permit. I don't know, whatever. Make up your story. Say you didn't know that you needed to get permits or something. But if you have all that and you're done to code, that gives an appraiser or a lot more leeway in giving it value, because we can tell when someone's added it. I've seen people enclose stuff with plywood I'm going, you got to be, you know,
yeah.
help me out here.
Yeah. Workmanship like manner, I think is the code,
code
to live by. Right. So if you're not going to get the permit, do it to a workmanship like manner and, you know, make sure that you are doing it to code and that you're not Mickey Mousing your gas lines and your water lines, and your sewer lines. That's probably not the idea. But if you do have something that is unpermitted, that does not necessarily stop us from lending on the property. So just keep that in mind. It's something that you need to call us in advance, talk to us about it, you know, tell us what it is. I might even ask you to take pictures for me so that I can see what it is. And I may run it past my appraisal underwriter and see, you know, how they feel about it before you get into contract and you put money into escrow and we spend money on an appraisal and you spend money on your physical inspection. And then, you know, you end up having a problem with it. So, Matt, I can see you're staring at me.
Yeah, we got a few comments back here. First of all, John jumped in and said, woot, mortgage mama.
All right, John, thank you.
Dad is here, says hi. I was sorry. He was working on the boat.
Like, all right, more of my family, more of my peeps.
As always. Helen on Facebook says, thank you. And Deep in OC on YouTube says, I'm wondering on a down payment assistance program from, is that supposed to be Cal HFA?
Yeah, so it's Cal HFA.
Cal HFA.
Uh-huh.
When and if does it dissolve?
So I'm not too sure what he's asking. He might be asking if the program, the down payment assistance program of Cal HFA, is going to be dissolving. That is actually an answer I can't give. We had quite a few changes with down payment assistance this year right as COVID hit and the lending guidelines kind of started to tighten. Down payment assistance changed quite a bit. And in all complete honesty, I stopped writing them and offering them to my clients. I did not feel that the benefit that they were getting out of them was worth what they were going to owe back in return for having taken that loan. And so in to be totally 100% honest, I have not looked into the Cal HFA program in at least the last couple of months. I know Heidi's still online with us and she's watching, and I don't know, maybe Heidi's got an answer for us. I'm not sure. But I have not heard that it's dissolving. It could be happening. And just being totally honest, I haven't looked into it.
Sorry if everybody heard me scoffing in the background. That was not to your response, but John also on Facebook asking, is that a pillow with Manny's face?
Yes, that is a pillow with Manny and Mikey and Zeke's face. So yes, I got all of them in here with me. That is true. Honestly, Cam, thank you so much for coming on. I think this has been great. If there's anything we didn't, if there's so much, oh my gosh, I could have you on again. We didn't talk about closing cost credits and how that changes your appraised value. I remember we started off when we were just talking before the show started. There was something else that we had talked about that you're like, well, I think we should talk about this. Is there anything that I missed that I didn't bring up that you feel is really important for people to hear? Right now, especially today in the environment, purchases going crazy, 15 offers on every single house. Is there anything that you can give or you can add?
The best really that I can offer, and I realize this will probably almost be more frustrating to hear than it would be helpful, but really the best is that what everyone needs to remember is, even though I know you've lost a couple of houses, these are obviously more for the buyers, this message, but I understand in most cases you've lost probably 2, 3, 4, 5 houses. You really want the house. You're willing to pay over asking. You've submitted your letter showing the beautiful picture of your family and why you really want the house. But when it comes to your appraisal, what we have to do is justify that price, or essentially prove that value is there on paper. And that's not always possible, even when you have 20 people willing to pay that price or more. Sometimes there's not a comparable pool that's there for you that really can let you put something together that is just bulletproof. And so that's what happens a lot of times if you're seeing an appraisal come in low or something along those lines. That's a lot of times what's causing that. And I know most appraisers don't like, you know, anyone who's been doing this for more than a month has submitted an appraisal that hasn't come in at value and experience the fun that comes after that. So I don't think there's any appraiser out there who truly enjoys bringing self in low, maybe, but I'm sure there's other issues there.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's probably some crabby ones that probably.
Yeah, there are.
There's always those people, right?
The profession is made up of independent thinkers, ideally.
Yes.
So that usually is a good thing, but can sometimes be a bad. But we are limited to the data that we have available. And just remember that. So, you know, and that goes really kind of to all the topics, pools, ADUs, additions, permits or not, you know, all that stuff. Really, you know, we have a data pool that is not always as ideal as we want. And so sometimes you may not get what you're hoping for. And in some cases, it may end up giving you something that you're happy about, that, you know, did higher than you expect. We've done those as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the bottom line is you guys are doing the best job that you can. It is a crazy market at the moment. And Cam, you're great as always. I appreciate it. This was great information, great advice. Anybody that's listening to us, you guys are more than welcome to give me a call. If you have more information, you want to get a little bit deeper, please feel free to do so. The office here is 844-935-3634. If you haven't already, please like the video. It helps with my algorithms, whether you're watching on Facebook or YouTube or Twitch, which I don't think we had any viewers on Twitch today, but I'm working on that. I'm going to make it happen. But on YouTube, make sure you guys subscribe to the channel, turn on those notifications, make sure you click the all button for me so you know when we come on. And with Facebook, make sure that you guys like the page. So Cam, thanks again. Thank you so much for everything. I'm going to definitely have you on again. And anybody out there listening, if you guys have questions, please send them in to me and I'll get them over to Cam and I'll get you answers. So we hope that you guys all have a fantastic evening. It is Wednesday. We are not on next week. Next week is Thanksgiving. We talked about this last week in the show. I am off come Wednesday. I am off. I cook Wednesday. I cook Thursday. I eat Friday. I eat Saturday. I eat Sunday. And I will be back in on Monday. So Mortgage Mom is closed from Wednesday to Monday. But we hope you guys all have a fantastic weekend this weekend. We hope you all have a great holiday for Thanksgiving. Cam, you're awesome. We love you. And we hope you guys all have a awesome evening. Talk to y'all soon. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
All right, cool, we're off. All right, awesome. You did great. You did great.
I forgot about that. I sort of moved my phone right away.
So much, Cam, really.
Debbie Marcoux is licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act, NMLS ID 237926. Also licensed in Arizona 0941504, Georgia 69178, Illinois 031.0058339, Nevada 57237, Oregon, Tennessee 184373, Texas, Washington MLO 237926. Heidi Slagle Points, California DBO 1666881.
She's a mortgage mom. She can get things done when you're in need and don't know where to go. Pick up the phone and call mom.